Welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Wade Wegner.
And I'm Steve Marks.
All right. And we've got a great show today.
We have a fantastic show.
We actually have a lot of new stuff to share, so it's going to be pretty exciting. But as always, we're going to start with the news.
Yes, we will.
First news item. Steve was very excited to share this.
I am excited about this. This is very exciting news. You are about to start paying for something that used to be free.
Yep.
Okay, and the reason that we wanted to make sure to talk about that, even though that's not terribly exciting, is you got to make sure to stop using this stuff if you don't want to get charged.
So
this is the AppFabric caching stuff, which has been free, and that free period
ends.
There
was a promotional period up to... Wasn't it 8-1?
It just stopped. Just, by the time you're watching this...
So you've probably paid a few bucks.
You may have paid a few dollars, yeah, if you forgot to sort of turn this stuff off.
Yeah.
I don't know how much... but anyway,
it depends a lot on the cache size, you know, et cetera.
But so. That's the... This is... It's now over. Now you got to pay if you're going to use caching. That's fine because it's a good service and you should want to pay for it if you want.
But for people
who are just playing around with it and like you put up some demo and you sort of forgot about it or whatever, make sure to go and you know turn off those caches and
just go into the portal. You delete the namespace associated with the cache. So
right.
Yep. Corey Fowler.
Yep. Friend of the show. Like super friend of the show.
Yes.
We joke about the time, like, anytime we tweet something from, like, the Cloud Cover Show account or whatever.
We know who's going to retweet it first.
Corey is always the fastest on the trigger to respond or to retweet or whatever. And so, Corey's great.
Yep. And he has a good blog post about using NuGet packages for Windows Azure. So, especially just grabbing down some of the elements and things that you'll need to get everything from SDK to, you know, libraries for storage to... What are the things that you need from an MVC3 perspective to make sure that you've got copy local true set on the right assemblies and so forth. So he went through and kind of did a nice walkthrough about the value of it. But then at the bottom here, he started listing out what he thought were some of the more compelling ones. So, you know, system.web providers, Windows Azure Service Bus, my favorite, Windows Azure .webroll.mvc3, which I put together real quick one day before I did a demo.
I didn't know that was yours.
I'm amazed.
I just pointed somebody to that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, just the other
Same
day.
Same with the Windows Azure caching. So that's another one that I've actually gotten requests to improve these because evidently I don't quite understand the NuGet model of like kind of chaining NuGet packages when they have common dependencies. But at the same point, at the same time, it's pretty useful. I mean, new project, hey, you want to use caching? Just grab the NuGet package and it'll configure everything in your web.config, app.config, et cetera, for you.
Yep, a lot of these are handy. The CDN helpers, we covered on the show.
Yep.
Nate came and
talked
about
that. Is that the stuff that Nathan put together?
Yeah.
Yep,
yeah.
Good.
And those are very cool.
Yeah. What else? I'm not familiar with this transient fault handling.
And that's like for retry logic, I think, for SQL Azure.
Yep,
and
failure
like
retry logic.
Yeah, I haven't used that either. But it's a good post. Like some of these you all have seen already because we've covered them on the show or whatever. Some of these you won't. We haven't seen some of them yet.
Yeah.
All of it's pretty handy, and so this is just a good reference. I hope Corey keeps adding to it. I hope it's one of these blog posts that gets edited over time.
Yeah, kind of like his ultimate development VM post where he just keeps it refreshed.
Where he puts in the new tools and stuff.
So Corey, we expect you to keep this up to date.
Yes.
All right.
This is a requirement.
Excellent. We'll move on.
This guy.
So there's a new Windows Azure Platform Training Kit available today. And let me enumerate the updates. I'm going to skip the first one that I've listed here. So, but we've updated a couple of the labs. So the Windows Azure Deployment Lab, we've updated so that they use the latest PowerShell commandlets. Did some updates to the ASP.NET application one, storage, CDN. And but most importantly, and where a lot of the work was done, is we refactored for the update to the Visual Studio Tools for Windows Azure. So it had been 1.3, and now they've just released today 1.4. And so a lot of the work that we put into the training kit was to update all the projects so that, you know, we went through the migration wizard and conversion wizard for you so that you don't have to every time you open up a lab or exercise.
Yeah.
And then also from the perspective of some of the screenshots and kind of the flow for walking through the lab, some things have changed.
Right.
So, grab the next version of the training kit. So it's been updated for the 1.4. And amazingly, this is a great transition.
Speaking of which.
to that release, which is going to be this week's feature.
Yep.
So we did just release yesterday an update to the tools for Visual Studio. And some exciting stuff in there. I mean, there's some good updates. And we'll walk through them.
And this is all on the tooling side. I want to make clear for people that they're really kind of two separate things.
Yeah.
And usually you just get them together and use them together and version them together and
we
don't worry about it.
We even have like a chain, you know, chainer or whatever that is for
bootstrapping. Like when you installed the tools and SDK, that was probably called something like that, for Windows Azure, you just went to a web platform installer or something and clicked a thing or whatever. And you got everything and didn't worry about it. That really installed things that can be installed separately, which is, you know, the command line tools that do like CSPAC and CSRun
SDK,
and whatever,
right? I mean,
the SDK.
And then the tools, which
is just the Visual Studio sort of niceties on top of that. So that's where all the templates live, and that's where the cool like right-click publish happens and things like that. And it calls in all that stuff that's in the underlying SDK that also has the libraries and whatever. So that has not revved in this release. So in this release, the SDK itself
the SDK is not revved.
Has not changed.
Right.
Only the tools have. And so people kind of...
Well, if you really dug into the package before, you would have seen that the SDK was versioned 1.4.
Yep.
Actually, I think 1.4.2.
Something like that.
And the tools were still 1.3.
1.4.1.refreshed again.
Oh, that's right. Something. Actually, there is a refresh attribute on
it. I think it's something crazy like that.
Yeah.
Right, so, and the tools had not been revved.
So actually, in talking to the team, I don't actually know that there is a chainer that has the tools and the SDK yet available as a consolidated package.
Okay.
However, the way that the team recommends to go about doing it is go to WebPI, and like if you click the link on the blog post, it'll you know pop it up and give you the August release of the tools.
Right.
So you can download these tools.
And it'll presumably
update it.
Do the dependency analysis and whatever too. And so
I've already got it installed. I'm actually amazed that it's going to let me go this far. But so I have it installed. I had 1.3 for the tools before. And I didn't uninstall anything. I just went through web platform installer, and got the update.
So very easy to get.
Yep.
Doesn't change those underlying like the libraries and stuff.
Yeah.
Like none of the libraries changed. None of the APIs changed. This was about just the tooling thing.
Yep.
And it has some great new stuff in the
tool. So here at a high level, it talked a little bit about what's there. So profiling applications in Windows Azure, we'll dig into that. That's essentially being able to get some data back out to give you insight into what's my CPU doing, what does memory look like, et cetera. Support for MVC3 web roles out of the new project template experience. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Multiple service configurations within a single project. This is really pretty awesome, and we'll definitely show that. And then also there's some updates to validation. So all those times where you go to deploy and you forget to update your storage to point from to your actual storage account instead of your local developer storage emulator and making sure that you have the right assemblies and so forth. So pretty cool stuff. So one thing to note as well, we thought we'd point out is Cloud Nick, as we like to call him.
Cloud Nick.
Yeah, his Twitter alias is Cloud Nick.
Oh, okay.
We actually haven't had Nick on the show yet. We need to do that. So Nick is one of the Windows Azure technical evangelists on the team.
He had like two opportunities to be on the show,
and
like both times he had some lame excuse about why he couldn't.
I don't think they were lame excuses.
They might have been really good legitimate excuses. But still, but he's not here, so I can say that they were lame excuses. We do have to get him on the show at some point.
But he put together a really nice blog post that it's going to go through a lot of the things we'll go through on the show today, just walking through the different capabilities and such. So
it is a nice blog. It is. It's a screenshot full. That's a word. Screenshot full. Blog post about all the features so that you can actually see the step-by-step so that if you're having trouble following something or using some feature, this is also a nice, all these images are kind of, they step you through the stuff.
Yeah.
Very detailed.
As we were prepping for this, one thing to point out is these tools are pretty nascent even to Steve and I. So we're going to walk through and make some guesses about some things. But for the most part, I think we can demo the stuff, and if we make any mistakes, we'll follow up. So.
Yeah, we'll make sure in the notes to correct anything we have wrong. So if by the end of the week when we actually publish this, we mess anything up, we'll tell you.
Yep. All right. So I've already got the tools installed. I just thought I would walk you through some of this stuff. So I'm going to go ahead and create a new Windows Azure project. First thing you're going to see is the support right here for MVC3.
Yay!
So that's pretty cool.
This is very exciting to me.
And so go ahead and grab this, click OK.
And then you're going to have to right-click and add some references and set them to copy local to true and go search on the web to find, because there are like seven of them.
I will no longer have to go to your blog post any longer.
That's good.
Because you've got a nice blog post enumerating
So excited to put at the top of that blog post. Oh, by the way, just get the latest tools and don't mess with it. So that's going to be exciting.
Yep. So for those of you that have used MVC3, you're most likely familiar with this. So I'm just going to go ahead and choose an internet application using the Razor syntax. And voila, you know, MVC3 running. Go ahead and hit F5, and everything's going to be, you know, nicely. a couple of things, though, as this is getting up, started to run, a few things to point out. First of all, Steve alluded to the fact that you don't need to copy local for the references. So if you take a look at the references, what you'll see is, like, if I come down here to Razor, look at properties, you'll see copy local is set to true.
Right.
So I don't have to change this any longer.
So this is exactly like the MVC2 template, mm-hmm. in fact, where that's why you wanted to use that template instead of just sort of creating a new MVC2 project by yourself, because the template included all the references that you need and set them to copy local. The MVC3 one does the same. It's even more valuable because MVC3 has more DLLs, and they're not always explicitly referenced.
Yep.
So that was always kind of hard, and it's a lot easier to do it now. And That was it. New.
Now, a couple of things to point out. So one of the things Steve and I discovered as we were digging into this morning,
since we tried it for the first time a couple hours ago, maybe.
One of the things we noted is there have been some changes, like things that are new to the MVC3 template as part of these tools that we weren't familiar with just standard MVC3 templates.
Right.
And essentially, if you dig into, let's see, the library package references. So this is the NuGet packages that are installed as part of it. One of the things that's here, and it's hard to kind of see here, but it's the ASP.NET Universal Providers. So I believe this is an alpha release of new providers for membership, for SQL, for session state management, and so forth. And I think there's a lot of really good things here. Like, I believe with the session state provider, there's better support for SQL Azure, fixes, things that have been updated.
Yeah, these are going to be really nice for using SQL Azure for all these providers and whatever.
Yep.
So these are nice.
Yep. But the one thing we've noted is that by default, so with that universal provider, if you take a look at your web.config file, you'll note that you have some connection strings here that point to SQL Express. Now this is the same with, I think, MVC3, not this version that's part of the cloud tools, but for the standard MVC3, this is also here. But in the MVC3 standard templates, when you hit F5, you're not actually hitting the providers on the main page.
Right.
So in many cases, if you follow your blog post or anything else, you can take that, deploy it to Windows Azure, and don't change anything, and everything works. Like, you'll have an experience where you can hit the page and everything's
great.
Yeah,
like, I have a lot of apps that don't actually use the providers for anything, and they've always sort of just worked.
Yep.
And so you might be doing the same thing.
Yep. So if you go to deploy it and publish it to Windows Azure, it will fail because you haven't, well, first of all, it's pointing to SQL Express.
Yep.
Even if you update it to SQL Azure, you'd have to create a database and deploy
the tables
and everything that it's looking for in that database.
Right. So this template, the gotcha here is that this template, if you just go use it, press F5, everything will look okay because
you have SQL Express local,
right? And then when you go deploy, you'll get an error, and it'll be about the connection string being invalid or whatever.
So what you can do is come to the library packages and uninstall the universal providers.
Yeah.
And essentially,
obviously, if you're using them, then what you want to do is, you know, actually set up the, do all the stuff with SQL Azure, test it locally against your SQL Azure database, and then go deploy. And in fact, it's great if you do that. But
If you're like us and you're just deploying a lot of MVC3 stuff, maybe demos, proof of concepts, whatever, this is...
Who needs membership and sessions? And not me.
Nope. I just use ACS. So.
Yeah. I just assume all users have admin privileges to everything.
So that's the one gotcha. And actually, we've got it... you can see it's up and running. The only thing that I did here was remove the universal provider. So.
Right.
All right,
so that's cool. So that's MVC3.
Now, a couple of other things we talked about was the having multiple CFCFG files, so configuration files for different environments. So easiest way, I think, to take a look at this is, open up, the the tooling experience on top of the configuration files, and you'll see that you have service configurations now. And by default, you have a cloud and a local. In fact, you can see it over here as well. I've got two CFCFG files here. This very first page, though, the configuration tab, you're actually setting values and properties specific to the CSDEF file. So one thing to note, if you try to go to cloud and then change any of these things here, they're all disabled. And that's because, you know, the DEF applies to all the configurations, right? So whenever you change the CSDEF settings, you have to have it set to all configurations, and then you can update it. It would be nice to see the same model apply to CSDEF, because I know that, you know, locally I may want to have a VM size or instance count when I deploy. I always want to make sure it's extra small or something else. But
you should be able to change the instance count, shouldn't you? Because the instance count is actually a CSCFG thing.
But the way in which the tooling is on this page. Oh, actually, you know what? Instance count, yes, not VM size. Good.
And VM size doesn't apply locally anyway, so you're probably actually okay. So you can set the VM size to what you want it to be in the cloud.
I didn't notice. It's a very nuanced thing. Everything is disabled except for.
That's quite subtle. I have to admit, that's quite subtle.
I missed that.
But that's nice, because that does mean you can do what a lot of people do, I think, which is run one instance locally, and then like me, forget when they go to deploy to change it to multiple instances, and then they're annoyed that, you know. And so it's nice to be able to have those things separate.
Absolutely. But here you can see, like, I can choose my cloud instance, and presumably I will update that to whatever.
Right, to some actual connection.
And locally, I'll just end up having it as use development storage true. One thing that... So we've got endpoints, which, again, all configuration,
right.
Local storage.
Yeah, really you're going to use this for, like, connection strings. Yeah. It's mostly going to be for settings and for instance count, I think.
So a good thing to do, like, I actually kind of wish we had this in the templating for the MVC3 thing, is extract the connection string that's part of web.config, put it in the CFG file, right? So you can have a cloud version and a local. Your local is going to point to SQL Express, and your cloud will point to your SQL Azure database.
Yep.
So cool. So that's pretty neat. As part of that, there have been some updates in terms of how you package and publish your application. So you can see here now there's a package dialog. So if I choose package, it's very simple. I can say which service configuration file do I want, and do I want it to be debug or release? And when I click package, what it's going to do is provide that local CSPKG file and the CFCFG file that I can use to just go to the portal and deploy it.
This used to be right-click publish, and then you check
that
thing that said
radio button.
Just create the files or whatever. It's a slightly more obvious way, I think, to produce those locally now.
So now I can just grab those items there. And for the publish dialog, I think it's a little bit more explicit now. This is publishing directly to a publish.
Right. So separating those out, I think, makes the dialogues a lot clearer, and makes it easier to find the setting if you just want to create the package.
And you've got very similar things here, so you can see I can choose the right service configuration file, build configuration, and there's actually a new thing in here as well. It's called enable profiling. Now, a lot of good details on this that you can take a look at. In fact, I think Nick did a really good job talking about, let me find this, down here, profiling support, and talking through the different options that are there. So you can do CPU sampling, instrumentation, .NET memory, concurrency, and then there's actually this setting here as well. Let me show you. Right here, once you go to settings, that's enable tier interaction profiling, which when I read that, I had absolutely no idea what this was about. Nick, fortunately, did the research.
I hesitate to guess.
Right here.
Okay, right.
So basically the execution time of synchronous ADO.NET calls and functions of multi-tiered applications that communicate with one or more databases.
Well said, Wade.
Thank you. It's as if
you
I was
put that
it.
Just right. It's great.
So this is pretty cool. I mean,
this
so I
is
can
very
start
cool.
to grab some stuff. So, you know, I can choose CPU sampling, etc. In fact, I've already done this and deployed it. So over here is that instance that I showed you, the My Web Deploy. This is the MVC3 app. And if you come here to the Service Explorer, you'll see that under Windows Azure Compute, I have two of these that have been deployed with profiling set up and running on them. So if I select it, I can use View Profiling Report. And let's flip over here.
Yeah, because I have a theory that I want to test, in which this is how new we are to this
stuff.
Yeah,
see, there it is.
That's the file.
Okay. So what it's doing...
But which is that the input or the output?
I'm guessing this is the output.
I think that's
it's
got
to be the output.
And it's going to disappear again, right?
Presumably, 3.2 megabytes isn't required So what we're not still sure how it's communicating directly to the instance, saying grab the profiling data.
Yeah.
But one way or another, it's doing that. And
so basically, right. So somehow we just sent a message to that specific instance that said, please send down the profile log.
So we're connecting to it, it's preparing it, and then it's sending it to storage, and then from storage, Visual Studio is grabbing it. And then what we can end up doing now, what we can do now is, where did that go? Oh, it already popped it up. Look at that.
Yeah, it's there.
So here's the memory profiling report. So taking all that data, and I don't know what we were doing here that required all that CPU usage.
Some heavy computation.
Yeah.
Doing
MVC3.
Some Monte Carlo simulation. This is, quite frankly, this is awesome. So you could just sort of pull out, do the profiling sort of stuff that you want to do against your actual running application in the cloud.
Yep. So if you did have some
and it pushes stuff through blob storage is sort of the way to get those logs back out, which is similar to the way like IntelliTrace works, and frankly some of the like an on-demand transfer of diagnostics logs and things like that all use this similar pattern where you sort of ask for the stuff, it gets pushed out to a container in blob storage, and then you pull it down and do all the visualization and whatever. So, also now we know where we spent the time, right?
Yep.
It was in the worker process for IIS. it was in rpcrt4.dll.
Yep.
I don't know what that is.
You're really familiar with that one.
I have no idea what that is.
Okay.
But anyway.
So profiling support's enabled.
It's very
cool. Which is nice. Yep. One last thing I want to show is we mentioned validation. Now, in the past, if you'd done MVC3 and deployed it, you wouldn't have those assemblies referenced, and you didn't get warned. There was no warning saying, hey, make sure to add those references. And so what I'm going to do is come to that app that I just created, and if I come to, let's say, the Razor assembly, now you wouldn't want to do this, but it's just highlighting the fact that it's
just
here
to cause an error, right?
Yep, just to cause an error. So now if I do a build, actually, do I have to do a package or? Here we go. Nope, I don't. I think I do have to build a package. Or rebuild? Or I'll just create a package.
By the way, I love that the debug or release dropdown is now in package and publish, because I always forget to go set the build to release when I go deploy, even though I want to. But
so you can see here there's a warning. There's another view that I'll show. It's a little bit easier, but you can see here, hey, it's a dependent on the following MVC assembly. Make sure to set it. And I think if you go to error list, so here you'll see error list right here as well, warns you. I haven't tested it much beyond the MVC3 stuff. I know the team said that they really tried to optimize for MVC3 since it was a common problem.
Yeah.
I'm fairly certain, though, that if you add something, that they basically have a list of everything that is on the instance, and if you add an assembly and you don't mark it copy local true, that it'll, if at the very least, give you a generic warning for that, saying, hey, whatever it is that you just added here, it's not going to be up in the VM.
This one's sort of tailored, is dependent on the following MVC assembly.
Correct. So it's a very specific
MVC assemblies must be added and whatever. So that one's, and you won't encounter this. I mean, if you do file new and you use the template, you'll never see this it'll have done it right. But when you're bringing in an existing MVC app or, when you're doing a migration, this is very handy to make sure you haven't missed any of those things that you have to add.
Yep.
Of course, if you use Wade's NuGet package to install, do all the
maybe
dependencies.
I have to add the universal providers for that. I don't know.
And
you can see here it's also warning me about the default connection as well, saying, hey, if you're going to go to publish this, it's pointing to SQL Express, so forth. So it's pretty cool.
This is all goodness. So these tools, the nice thing is, it's not a brand new rev of the whole SDK. Like, there are no breaking changes or anything that, whatever. There are some changes to the templates.
Yep.
I mean, they're new templates. For the most part, those changes are great. and the tools are just better. They're just sort of improvements here and there.
Yeah.
I think the F5 performance is better also. I haven't gotten to play yet with this, but weren't some of those fixes in this? Maybe I'm making stuff up.
I'm not sure.
Wade says it's
faster.
Oh, you know
what? I do recall that. Yeah, something about some part of the build was being called locally each time.
Yeah, there was some part that you didn't need
CSX.
To do.
Wasn't it the generation of the CSX folder with all the...
I think it amounted to copying files that didn't actually have
didn't
to, be
need to be copied
every time.
Each time.
And, so, and so I think you should see that when you're pressing F5 to run locally, particularly I think when you do it multiple times. Or I think you'll see that stuff is sped up
in
here.
It's not the...
Well, you need a CSX.
Yes, I mean,
that's where it goes.
But
I think recopying...
Maybe it created a package along
with... We have no idea what we're talking about. But I do believe that there was at least one performance fix to just boost the performance of F5 experience.
Yeah.
So the meta point here is I think everybody should go install this. I don't see a reason to not install these new tools. You can go back and install the old tools if you want again, and without disturbing the SDK. As far as I know, you never have to touch or reinstall the SDK to do this. It's just a pure sort of tools thing. So install the new tools, play around with it. I think everybody will like
Excellent.
Those.
Great.
So it's that time, right?
That time, yep.
Okay, so what's the intro going to be? I fear that the cameras were rolling for a long time before we started this show. And perhaps we should...
material there.
There's some stuff, Bob, that you please don't put in.
On there.
But I think you'll use your best judgment. That sounds scary. But why don't we let Bob give viewers kind of a behind-the-scenes view of, especially today as we're sort of
scrambling to get
working.
Things going, oh, it doesn't work.
Let's let people in a little bit on that. And so here's your tip
of the
week.
Sorry. Hello, viewers.
I've never used this thing.
How do I use this?
What's going on? Yes. Bob goes strictly by when he hears action.
Plastics.
It's the tip. Yes. Look
That's
at that.
Cool.
How does this work?
I have no idea how it works.
The internet's down.
Is that what's also used for...
We should speculate. But
right.
We don't need no badges.
I'm scared to do it yet.
Oh, you know what?
We should be upfront.
Going, oh, it doesn't work.
Waz. Get keys. There's some stuff, Bob, that you please don't put in
there.
Best show ever. Do you actually know how it works?
I actually don't know. We could just speculate on the show.
We should speculate.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah. And we're back. Okay. Something else hasn't shipped yet as the... I'm going to press F5 again just to find out.
Yeah, do you remember last week Scott alluded to things shipping? Well, he was so excited about it that we have two things shipping this week.
Yeah.
So,
and that's why.
He under-promises and over-delivers. That's right. The way Scott works. So
not only do we have these the brand new... The tools for Windows Azure. We do actually have a new API as well, or sort of a new feature in storage.
Yes.
Which I am told is going to be live sometime. By the time you watch this,
we're totally
going
to
hope
it's
live. Otherwise, you won't see this. If you're seeing this, it means that this stuff did in fact ship. And what it is it's analytics and metrics for storage.
Yes.
So it's the ability to capture things like how many times are blobs being downloaded, what's my total usage, what are the
how
transactions.
How much do I have stored within my container?
All that stuff is now possible to sort of get logged. And the way that it works is a special container gets created in blob storage called $log, or maybe logs. I don't remember if it's plural or not. I know. Jeez. I'm sorry. I can see I've let you down, Wade. I apologize for not knowing. Here.
You
I
have will, one thing to do.
No, I will find the answer for you. Okay. It's $logs.
Plural. Okay, good.
Okay. So a special container is created for logs, and that's where things are logged, like actual, like each access to blob storage. If you want, you can get every time someone reads something, every time someone uses a shared access signature, et cetera. You can get those all logged. And there'll be a special container called $logs, and then there'll be like a log file per hour, although there can be depending on how much stuff you have, there can be multiple ones in the same hour. When all the documentation is published, you can go read through this, but basically a bunch of blobs that represent different time periods.
Yep.
And then they have just sort of logs, you know, just sort of line after line of what happened, what was the request for. I think the status code too, like did it succeed? Did it, you know? So you can keep track of failed things and whatever.
So is it always turned on? So are logs always being?
It is not.
Okay.
I will show some code in a moment for actually how to turn that on.
Am I getting ahead of you? I'm sorry.
You're getting slightly ahead because there's another piece of this, which is there's also some metrics that have things like the total bytes used and things like that, the size of things, and those go into tables and those go into I think. perhaps a couple different tables that are called dollar sign metric something or whatever. They're sort of all sort of special name tables there. So there are actually two. So some data goes into blobs, some goes into tables. It's not all on by default. There's an API, a brand new API called, there are two methods. There's get service properties and set service properties. And they get and set XML. And the XML looks like this. So this is the settings I have on one of my blob storage accounts now. I have
so you've got the loggings and metrics.
Right. Yep. And the logging is the stuff that goes into blob storage, and metrics goes into tables. Yep. And here I've sort of turned everything on. I want to see all the reads, the writes, the deletes.
Yep.
There's a retention policy so that you can get these sort of automatically aged out so you don't have to bother with kind of deleting them after time. And I've set that to 14 days.
So that begs a question. If I set a retention policy so that I get rid of it, is that implying also that I'm paying for the logs as they're stored?
Yep. Okay. They're just in your regular storage account. They're specially named, so they're mostly going to be, I'm betting the next round of storage tools and whatever will kind of treat that container a little differently, kind of like people do with dollar sign root.
Yep.
But it is just a container, and so you do pay for those things. So this is what it looks like on my queues. You can get logs and things for queues and tables also.
It
looks different. This is a little app that I've built that I guess I'll leave now that I'm showing the URL. I'll leave it storageanalytics.cloudapp.net for the time being. I'll put together a blog post and we'll put a link in the notes. That just is a handy thing. So if I decide 14 days is way too long, let me make it 7. I almost made it 76. I left that in. That was a little debugging thing. By the time you see this, that'll hopefully gone. And then hopefully, I think it's going to tell me in a second that it actually did it, or it's just not working.
And so when you do this, you're calling the set config.
Right. So what's shown here, I got from get service properties, and then there you go. Wow, that took a while. And then
inefficient code. Saving
it. Yeah, I just do it 300 times in a loop, just to make sure it gets really saved.
It's a great retry policy.
Okay. Anyway, so I'll have this up. I'll have a blog post with some more details about this. But let me really quickly show what the API looks like because it's not that bad. But there's no, there isn't yet a storage client library method for this. And so you've got to kind of create your web request by yourself. And so what I'm doing here, let me just sort of reformat, is I'm keeping in a cookie or account name and key. You didn't see that, but for this thing, I logged in and whatever. Yeah. And then here, this is what the URL looks like.
Yep.
It's, foo.blob.core.windows.net. Res type equals service. That's like brand new. That never existed before. And comp equals properties, also a new sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that says I'm actually talking about, the thing I'm trying to address is the account itself and the service itself. Put a version on it and sign the request. And so this is how you sort of by hand with the storage client library, if there isn't a convenient method for some API, you can create your own web request and then sign it. And this is the method that gets the properties. Here I'm using a little X document just to format it. But actually the raw result of this is just some XML that's what you need. And then to save it, you do like the same thing, except you make it a put request and you actually write stuff to the stream, right?
That's great.
So that's it. So it's a very simple API for this get and set of the service properties. There will be full documentation and a full blog post from the storage team on what is actually logged, what's the format of those, exactly where does everything go. So read that for all the details.
Yep.
I will put together a blog post with a little more detail and maybe some convenient wrappers on how can you actually call the set and
so
get.
So you're going to build the updated storage client library for it then?
Well, it's like every time anyone does leasing blobs and they come and tell me, hey, I'm using your extension methods from your blog because so far that's the only .NET library for it. And so I imagine the only .NET library for this too.
So you just got this set up this morning, so which means that it's only been running, 45 minutes? Do you think we have any analytics or metrics or anything stored at this point?
I
want to check.
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay. So Maybe in within 20 minutes.
Right. I mean, this thing gets written maybe once per hour or whatever. Yeah. And I'm not 100% sure if at the time we're recording this, it's all even been turned on, because it's still in the process of being rolled out, I think, today. So
the service is there.
So we'll see. So the API works and whatever, but I'm not actually sure all the logs are actually getting written for all the all the accounts yet and things. Yeah. So, but that's why, wait for a blog post. You'll see a blog post from me also by the time this show goes live that will hopefully also have some actual examples of the logs that get written, more on this sort of tool and whatever, and make it easy.
Yep.
So,
well, we told you that some of the stuff today was a little nascent and new, so hopefully
didn't disappoint. All the code we wrote was written, I think, between the hours of like 7 a.m. and 9 a.m., right?
So, I didn't really write much code, but I did play with the tools. You wrote some code.
82 lines of code, if you count, you know, stuff like this.
Excellent. All right. Well, if you've got any comments or ideas that you want to communicate to us, let us know on Twitter at CloudCoverShow. And with that...
Until next time.
Thank you very much.